And welcome to Hello America. Welcome to the Glenn Beck program. This Jason Chaffetz story, where he is not going to run for Congress, and now he came out and said, "I may not even finish this term of Congress." Right. Well, what's happening there? What's happening there? Is somebody coming after Jason Chaffetz because he's been a bulldog lately, and you know, for the last couple of years? Does somebody have something on Jason Chaffetz and they are chasing him out? Has he hit a tripwire someplace?
They're also speculating it's possible that he's trying to angle for a Supreme Court nomination.
I had heard governor's
another one.
But he said no.
Supreme Court nomination.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, I don't think that's a good idea. Wow, really?
That's
all right. We'll get into that. Also, big election over in Europe, in France this weekend. This is really important. This could actually change the dynamics of the world this Sunday. We'll give you the information on that. But I want to start with the New England Patriots and the New York Times. There is a feud, a Twitter war, if you will, going on between the two. I think there is a true hero in this. You won't believe who the hero really is. A true hero and an answer to who's really responsible for the press. Who's really responsible for the fake news? Is it the press? Wait until you really dig into this story. We do it right now.
Entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck program.
We have the School of Greatness coming up today. We also have Dinesh D'Souza's wife going to be joining us in hour three. She's Venezuelan. She's from Venezuela. The stuff that is happening in Venezuela is truly terrifying. And what really pisses me off is the way the press is dealing with this. They're saying that this is the result of a populist presidency.
I believe she still has family there as well. So.
Yeah, no, it's a dangerous situation. She's going to give us the inside look on Venezuela. But you need to understand that this was a dictatorship. This was a socialist utopia. Here was a great country that went into socialism. And now, have you heard the deal on their gold? Now the president of Venezuela, he first went in, I think it was about a year ago, and went to somebody and said, I want to lease the gold to you. I want to take some of the gold for cash, for U.S. dollars, and I want you to give me the dollars, but I have the right to buy it back. And they said, okay, we'll take that as collateral. Now he's going and he's, I'm not sure if it's a bank. I think it's still his city. And he's saying, I'm going to outright sell all of the gold for U.S. dollars so he can infuse cash into their system. And it's a heist. No dictator ever takes that much money and then gives it all away and pumps it into the... It's a robbery of Venezuela.
Wow.
So really, really bad stuff happening in Venezuela, and that kind of stuff spreads, unfortunately. I want to talk to you a little bit about fake news and the press, and I'm going to show you a hero, a villain. I'm going to show you a mistake and the truth, and some of it you're going to cheer for, some of it you're really not going to like, but I guarantee you this will open your eyes, if you're willing to look at the stuff you like and don't like, this will open your eyes on who's at fault here. What's happening to our society and who's at fault? Let's start with the New England Patriots. They went to the White House to go with President Trump. And the big thing was, oh, look at the New England Patriots. They're not going to have the, not all of them are showing up to have their picture taken with Donald Trump when Barack Obama was there. Everybody was there.
So the New York Times Sports decided to tweet a picture, side-by-side picture, of the crowd of the Patriots in 2015 versus the crowd in 2017.
And what with the president in the middle.
With the president in the middle, and the exact same backdrop. And when, what you see is in 2017, there's a small gathering of players in front of the White House, well, behind the White House. And then there are staircases that go up the sides. And in 2015, those staircases are full. There's people all up and down, obviously much more interest in seeing Barack Obama than Donald Trump, because in 2017, there's almost nobody. There's no one on the staircases at all, and there's definitely a much smaller crowd.
Okay, so
that's what they tweeted.
The New York Times is trying to make the point, and the typical New York Times, typical failed New York Times, is trying to make it look like nobody wants to be have their picture taken with Donald Trump.
Right.
Here's what happens.
So the New England Patriots tweet, these photos lack context. Facts, in 2015, over 40 football staff were on the stairs. In 2017, they were seated on the South Lawn. So the picture does not reflect the entire crowd. In fact, they tweet another picture where the staff is there.
In 2017.
In 2017. And it not only does it go up the stairs on the side, it wraps all the way around the back. That picture that they tweeted has more people than the Barack Obama picture of 2015.
Okay, so now you can say fake news, New York Times. Look at what the New York Times is doing. How many times was the New York Times, how many times was it retweeted that original picture of Donald Trump looking like a loser?
I don't have the exact amount, but it was in the tens of thousands.
Tens of thousands of people retweeted that picture basically to say, ha, 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 it felt good.
Trump sucks. Obama
Trump
was better.
Trump sucks. Obama is great. And it feels good. Tens of thousands of people retweeted it. And the New York Times knew what they were doing. Or did they? Here's what the guy who made the decision, the sports editor who made the decision to tweet those two pictures, tweeted once the Patriots came out and said, no, you've got the story wrong. Here's what he tweeted.
He actually responded to a reporter asking him about,
okay,
what he said. And this is what he said. Bad tweet by me. Terrible tweet. I wish I could say it's complicated, but no. This one is pretty straightforward. I'm an idiot. It was my idea. It was my execution. It was my blunder. I made a decision in about 4 minutes that clearly warranted much more time. Once we learned, we tried to fix everything as much as possible, as swiftly as possible, and as transparently as possible. Of course, at that point, the damage was done. I just needed to own it.
Wow, is that great.
Is that the greatest apology you've ever heard?
It's a real guy. That's a real apology.
Great.
That guy is my one of my new heroes.
Just okay? Stand-up guy.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Stand-up guy. Just saying, look, man, I own it. It's my fault. It was 4 minutes I made this. Not even saying it was a little deal, big deal. No, I own it. Huge
Which
mistake.
Everybody else, almost anybody else would have done that. They'd be like, okay, get over it.
Right. It was just a stupid picture. I made a mistake, right. Blah, blah, blah. No, this is a guy that I want. I'm going to post this story up at glennbeck.com today. This is a guy I want you to talk about at your dinner table tonight with your family. I want you to read that tweet to your children and say, that's the way you own it. That's the way you make an apology.
Because we've all made mistakes like that, right? We've all jumped to a conclusion that was incorrect. We've all, and you know, there's a point to be made here that, you know, seemingly he wanted to see that, right? Like, you know, somewhere in his mind, he thought that impression was true. And he's like, wow, look at that. And wanted to put it out there and make sure people knew that, hey, these crowds did not compare.
And the only reason why we say he wanted to do that is because he works for the New York Times. We don't know anything about him.
We don't know. We don't know. But for some reason, he jumped to that conclusion without checking it.
Right. But this shows, because he's surrounded by people who think that, this shows, I don't care what I think. It doesn't matter what I think. It's the truth. What's his name?
I don't know, actually.
We've got to find out his name.
New York Times sports editor. A reporter contacted him. who did it. So I can.
Did you find out? Is Keith around? Did anybody find out? Because I asked yesterday if we could get this guy on the air. Have we tried?
I know we are trying. There was some confusion over what, you know,
which one it was.
Details.
Okay.
All right.
So.
But the issue,
please find out, Keith, please find out his name so I can talk about it. You have it?
It's not. New York Times sports editor Jason Stallman took full responsibility.
There we go.
Yeah, Jason Stallman.
Congratulations, Jason Stallman. If you can find his Twitter handle, you should tweet this and tweet, good job. Here's a guy, I haven't heard an apology like that in how long? Ever?
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, that's a great thing. Now, here's the problem. As he said,
damage
was done. Mm-hmm. Now, wait a minute. How is the damage done? We used to say corrections in the New York Times, they run on the back page. Nobody sees the back page. They run in a little teeny section. It was the headline. They're not going to correct it with the same headline. New York Times, wrong. Well, wait a minute. This isn't a newspaper. This is digital. They're giving it the same 144 characters from the same guy, from the same source, to the same people. So now we can see, because it is truly apples to apples. Mm-hmm. We're comparing the incorrect story and its impact of tens of thousands of retweets. And we'll see who the fake news people are, Did those people retweet, oh, crap, I just sent on to all my followers, I just sent on a fake news story.
All right. Do I have any responsibility for doing, or at least a responsibility to correct it? To be clear, what the New York Times did is not, they retweeted the exact tweet from the Patriots that I just mentioned. So they actually said, oh, by the way, we were wrong. Here's the evidence from the Patriots saying we were wrong. And then they went in to talk about how the delegation was, their quote was roughly the same. Okay. And this is just a snapshot in time. I don't have the current numbers. At one point, though, that night, the first tweet of the two pictures where it looked like Trump looked bad had 32,000 retweets. The correction had 54. Not 54,000.
54.
32,000 to 54.
Okay. So, whose fault is that? And we see this in the conservative realm.
You do?
I will tweet something out that feels good. I'll tweet something out that's true, but doesn't feel good. No likes, no retweets, nothing. Nothing. Whose fault is the fake news? In this particular case, whose fault is the fake news? It's not the New York Times. It's not the New York Times editor. They're all skewed. No,
They made a mistake, and that happens.
It's you minus 54 people.
Right, and when you say you, in this particular instance, it's the left.
It's the left.
And the left is the one that's excited about
correct.
That one. They're the one retweeting.
Correct.
And this idea that the left has no appetite for fake news, I think, is pretty well disproved right here.
Right here. You are retweeting. And again, as Stu said, I guess I should point that out. I just assume we all understand that. I don't think any of us are following the New York Times. You know, we're not like, I like and follow the New York Times on Twitter. So I think that's probably pretty low in our audience that you got that and then retweeted it. But anybody who did, you're following the New York Times and you retweeted this the first time and didn't retweet the correction, you are the problem. And every time that happens on our side, you are the problem.
Yeah.
It's as long as it's corrected and it's on Twitter, because that's apples to apples. Like we always say we lead with our mistakes. Most people don't. They won't put the headline right at the top. We put the headline right at the top. Try to do that. That's still not the same, because we may have chewed on something for, 20 minutes and the correction only takes 3. With Twitter, it's 144 to 144. It's the same space going to exactly the same people. It's not the press. And I will tell you, I mean, it is the press, but it is the people who are consuming it that are spreading it.
And you know, look, this guy at the New York Times who actually apologizes and takes responsibility, that person doesn't exist at name your random partisan hack fake news website.
Nope.
They just want the 32,000 retweets. They don't even bother with the correction.
Yep.
So that's it's a huge thing. And I think it's important for us as conservatives, as people who actually try to execute principles every day, to when you see someone on the other side take a step like that, it's important
to say
to make a big deal
you.
Out of it. It is.
This is important for us to retweet because it shows, because I am convinced a lot of this nonsense is because we're not listening to each other. A lot of this nonsense is because we assume the worst of each other. And we're not following the New York Times. And because we don't follow the New York Times, we didn't see them just correct this. And we didn't see a heroic move of a guy who, you know, there are people in the New York Times who were like, oh, just leave it. It doesn't matter. I mean, what are you doing helping him out, right? You know there were people that said that to him in the cafeteria. Yeah. We need to get to the point to where we can point out the heroes on both sides. And when we listen to each other, when we actually... We just assume the New York Times is always going to be unfair. We just assume CNN is just going to be unfair. They just assume Fox News and talk radio is going to be unfair. They put this show into the same category as Alex Jones. Well, that's because you don't listen to us and you don't listen to Alex Jones. That's why. You don't know the difference. We need to do it.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
All right, there is a huge, very important election happening in France this weekend, and I'll explain why it's important here in about 5 minutes. But as we're on about misinformation and fake news, there are 13 times misinformation has been spread during the French presidential campaign. And it's pretty amazing what's going on. And all of the supporters of each candidate, they are taking these fake news stories and they are retweeting them. First one is that Emmanuel Macron's campaign was funded by Saudi Arabia. Not true. Old photos repurposed claim a firefighter was assaulted by thugs and the media ignored the story. Not true. Marine Le Pen shocked by a veil worn by a little girl in a Russian cartoon, trying to make her look horrible. Not true. All of these stories are really truly affecting the French campaign, and this could mean very bad things for the West. More on that next.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury. The Glenn Beck Program.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Glenn Beck Program. I'm going to talk to you a little bit about the French elections and why you need to be aware of the French elections and, quite honestly, pray about the French elections. You know, we don't pay attention to other people's elections. They pay attention to ours because they know America affects the world. France will affect the world. This election is critical. Because there's a chance they are going to pick between a fascist nationalist and a communist nationalist. This weekend, they have, what is it, rolling it down to six people, I think it is. I can't remember. Rolling it down to about six people. They have different kinds of elections. You have to have 50% to win. If nobody wins with 50% this weekend, which is highly unlikely...
Highly likely never happened.
Yeah. So it's just not going to happen. But it could. If nobody wins with 50% this weekend, then it will go into a runoff between the top two. The problem is there's so much fake news and there is so much there's so much scandal in politics. Nobody likes anybody. except there are two people that are coming to the top, and that is, one, the communist nationalist, and his name is Jean-Luc Mélenchon. He is full-fledged, not socialist, he's a communist. He having a communist rule France will change everything. The other one is Marine Le Pen. She is a fascist nationalist. Both of them want to change the alliance with the United States and switch it to Russia. So both of them want out of NATO. They want out of the Western world. They want to throw in their lot with Russia. This is, you remember when I was on Fox News and I promoted a little book, a little blue book that I thought everybody should read, The Coming Insurrection. That was French. And what the point of that was, and I said, we're going to get to this point. What's happening in France is coming here. It's the same seeds. What that book was about was people are tired of the lies of the politicians. They're tired of the progressive lie, saying, oh, we're going to get there. They're tired of the liberal lie, as we understand liberalism. And they don't believe the conservative lie either. And so this book was put together that said, it's time for revolution. Enough is enough. It's time for revolution. There are enough people that have had it in France that if the top two are Mélenchon and Le Pen, the world changes no matter which one of those two win. If those are the top two finalists.
It's almost certain that they're going to be the top two, isn't it?
I mean, no, there's four really tight.
Yeah, it's pretty tight.
Four candidates, very tight.
Like, because there doesn't seem to be any good option there.
No, there's not.
All four of them seem bad.
They're all crappy.
Really bad.
Some of them are traditional French crappy, though.
Yeah.
The other two are bad, but...
But remember what happened here. This is what's happening. The crappy ones that are just their... You know, it's all cronyism. It's a typical politician. People are so done with the typical politicians that the argument in France is, I just want to burn down the whole system. I just start over. These guys, they're all bad. I want somebody to go in there and drain the swamp and clean it all out.
Same attitude is here.
Sounds familiar?
Yeah.
It is exactly the same thing, except they're voting between a fascist and a communist. We didn't do that. Now the argument this time is for the other three candidates that are not fascists and communists, they're just bad politicians. They're saying you got to vote for us. You got to coalesce around one of us because otherwise you're going to have these top two. I don't see that working. Now, hopefully it does, but I don't see that working. I see the communist and the socialist who are so sick of it coalescing around the Marxist. And the people who live in the countrysides of France and are tired of their country being mocked, laughed at, getting last in line, and seeing all of these Muslim no-go zones, they're all going to coalesce around Marine Le Pen. And you have a chance of those two, and I hope it's wrong. I hope this is wrong. But it changes the West and puts us, I believe, one step, perhaps more, towards a global war. So congratulations. Last week it was just worried about vaporization of Seoul, South Korea, and this week it's just about the end of the West with France and the end of NATO.
We got through it last week. Maybe we'll get through it.
Yeah, maybe we'll get through it this week.
We'll go on Monday. Optimism. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow, that was great,
right,
Pat.
I'm a little ray of sunshine.
I have my gut tells me that they're not. We're not going to be facing this on Monday, but I don't have anything to base that on except my gut, and that might just be wishful thinking. I don't know. Did you guys see the show last TV show last night? Terrifying. Mm. So you know,
sorry I missed that.
Yeah, I know.
I love to be terrified.
This one,
I love it.
I'm inviting. Right. I'm inviting this woman in. Hopefully this week. She is Richard oh, shoot, what's his name? He was the president of the Dallas Fed. You know, Richard.
You had this issue yesterday with Richard Spencer.
Yeah, I know. It's not Richard Spencer. He's the Nazi. She was working at the Dallas. She was working on Wall Street. 2001 happened, and she moved away from New York because she wanted to be safe, and she was sick of the corruption on Wall Street. She was like, this is just sick. She comes down here. She starts exposing Wall Street for what it is through the Dallas Morning News. The head of the Dallas Fed reads her stuff and is like, this woman's really sharp.
Is it Robert Kaplan?
No.
Oh.
Former.
Sure.
Yeah, I'm positive. It's Richard Fisher. Okay. Thank you, Richard Fisher. Richard, I think, is a really good guy. He doesn't believe the same stuff I do, per se, but I think he's a good guy. He's just in the system, or was. So he sees her stuff and he says, wow, she's brave. She's exposing a lot of stuff on Wall Street. Let's bring her in as an intern to the Fed. She's in there, and this is like 2002 to 2007. And she's doing all kinds of research for the Fed, and she's saying, this whole thing's going to collapse. This is a nightmare. It's going to collapse. Don't you see the bubble and the tranches and the CDOs? This is all a game. And everybody in the Fed mocked her. She's pregnant with twins. She leaves to go out and have her twins. She has her twins. The market collapses. And Richard calls her and says, I don't want you to be an intern anymore. I need you to be my right-hand person. So she becomes his right-hand person for all of the research for the Dallas Fed. And she finally just left the Fed. He's left the Fed. She left the Fed. And she's now exposing it. And the book is called Fed Up. And she's written it for people like us. It's not Fed talk. It's not written for the people in New York or in banking. It's written for us to understand what's happening. Oh my gosh, guys. She is, when I said, I think we're going to go to a digital currency. She's like, oh, Glenn, absolutely. And they're trapping your money. She said, it's all being laid right now. And they're all open about it. It's not a conspiracy. They're all open about it. They are going to trap your money because it's the only way they see. And she said they're open about it. She was quoting the people. And she's like, look, I don't believe in conspiracy theories. There's no star chamber. The Bilderberg stuff is nonsense. She said these are just bad, corrupt, greedy people who are doing the right thing. And she said, and the good guys are just doing the right thing for the shareholders. And she said, and that's wrong at this point. You got to do the right thing for the country and the world, not the shareholders. She said, so it's just greed that's driving it all. And she said, it's out of control. And she's warning collapse. And she was talking about solution, what you need to do to prepare. She's the woman I've been waiting for. You know, we found two people now, Chris Martinson, who is really good, that we can explain what's coming. She's on the inside, or was on the inside, for 15 years between Wall Street and the Fed, and she can explain it. And she was big on MSNBC, CNBC. She was big on CNBC, but as soon as she started to say all of the things that she's saying, now nobody wants to talk to her. And she said, I'm an absolute pariah.
Yeah, people don't like to hear that the whole system's going to collapse. It's weird that way.
Yeah, they're strange people that don't want to hear their life is going to end.
It's weird that they don't want to hear that life is going to end as we know it. I enjoy it. I enjoy it a lot.
She's saying it's not that. She's actually, she has valid points on how to get through it. She's like, look, you just have to learn from our grandparents.
We should know about it so we can prepare.
Right.
Got to be prepared.
I asked her, I said, so would you buy a house today? And she's like, absolutely not.
Oh, good.
Great.
Oh, good.
Good. Good.
Right. Thank you.
Good. Thank
awesome.
You.
Yeah.
It's a good. Wonderful time. I said, thank you.
I said, would you sell your house? She said, I wouldn't get into any long-term investing. She said, anybody who is talking to you about long-term investments, she said, there's not going to be enough time.
She recommend taking money out of banks?
Not yet, no. She said, but you need to watch it closely.
You wouldn't want to create a run on the banks either.
Right.
But.
She said, you know, because somebody asked that question in the audience, you know, should I take my money out of the bank? She's like, no. She said, it's not happening yet, but it's going to. And she said,
what is her timeline?
She said she, I think I asked her and she kind of hedged on that, you know, because nobody knows. And I said,
so I'm ahead of the game. Have I said, nothing, if we don't save anything, don't, yeah, right, don't invest.
Right.
Jeffy's winning for
once. So way to go.
Yeah.
Way to go.
Yeah.
She
Your
said
lack
the
of
same thing.
She's paying off finally.
She said the same thing. She brought it up to me in the makeup room. She brought it up to me. She said, Glenn, people are going to come with torches and clubs. She said, I was at the mall yesterday. She just wrote an article on the new Gilded Age in America. She said, I was at the mall here in Dallas, and she said, I saw three Rolls Royces. Three. And she said, I thought maybe, is this one Rolls Royce that just keeps going around the corner? She's like, no, there were three Rolls Royces people driving. She said, I went back and I looked it up. Do you know that the sales of Rolls Royce since the election has gone up, what was it, 97%? Anybody remember that?
Hey, well, in this neck of the woods, what it was has. It?
Oh, I believe it.
67%.
I mean, look around Dallas. Yeah. We've got to be the luxury car capital of the planet.
Oh, yeah.
I know sales must have gone up 8,000% of four-door Maseratis, because that's all I see.
Right.
Yeah, Maseratis,
and she's saying,
Teslas.
What she said was, you know, she didn't have a problem with wealth, but she said, she said, I'm standing there in the parking lot, and I'm thinking to myself, do these people not get it? They're going to come and drag you out of that car and kill you. And it reminded me of a story that Jay Leno told me when I was in his, you know, Jay's garage. And Rafe was running towards this $3 million classic.
I remember that. It was a Bugatti, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a Bugatti. Yeah. Were you guys there with me?
I was there, yeah.
So remember when he was running? Do you remember the story he told about that Bugatti? That Bugatti was like a 27 and 29 Bugatti, okay? Really expensive at the time. And it was owned by somebody in New York. And he said the guy stopped driving it. And remember, it had been, they found it like on a farm, and it had been used to like pull stuff or a truck or something, remember? And he had to totally restore it. And he said the guy had to stop driving it after the market crash because every time he took it out, people were throwing rocks at him.
Because they were in tough times, and they saw this fancy car.
And they saw this fancy car.
Mm-hmm. Well, we should at least point out, at least until Sunday, Europe should be stable, which is great. Listen to these polls, though, real
quickly.
This is amazing. This is, again, like Marine Le Pen, the kind of fascist person, is on the right in the top. She's second in this one. 24, 22.5, 19.5, 19.
Wow.
And there's four different pollsters that have it almost exactly the same way. Four candidates that close together.
The Glenn Beck Program.
They're more comfortable with that. We're just looking at these numbers in France. I don't think Le Pen wins. If it becomes a runoff between the communist and the fascist, I think the communist wins.
That's what The Economist believes as well.
Yeah, I mean, you know, but the best scenario is you get the French Republican and the French Democrat, if you will, and those two win.
The best scenario isn't the communist winning?
Yeah, and it's not the fascist winning. But if Le Pen is number two and then there's just a bad politician as, you know, the other one, the bad politician will win against Le Pen. Not sure about
this
with the communists, though.
The Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.